through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
What a weekend series for the Mariners. Took 3 of 4 against the Oakland, Oakland Astros. I'm looking too far ahead. Against the Oakland A's, including winning their last three by a total of, 3 runs? Won by a total of 3 runs in 3 games. It was an amazing series with plenty to be excited about, but even more so, Mike Salk,
yes,
joining me now, filling in for Jake Heaps. It brings us to really, really fun conversations about whether the Mariners are legitimate contenders, and I have my questions still because I'm a pessimistic, pragmatic person, but they're important questions to have.
Well, it's go time now. I mean, like I talked to you guys, Friday? And I will admit I was feeling a little negative.
A little negative because you were going to go into series against the A's and Astros?
Yeah. I mean, we would watch Thursday night where they didn't quite get their doors blown off, and credit to them for kind of hanging around in that game. But, you know, they weren't able to get it done on Thursday. And Montero gave it up late, which, by the way, kudos to them. That was a DFA-worthy performance. It was just time, and we can talk more about him.
Curtis celebrated that.
Yeah, it
celebrated
was time.
It like it was his birthday. You were so excited.
I was the last holdout on the Montero front, too.
Saying that they should wait longer?
Yeah, I was right there, and then finally Thursday, I was like, yeah, you just can't. So, anyway.
His ERA needed to get to 8 before
decided on that. That's exactly right.
I was right there.
Salk wanted to get to double digits before he changed his mind.
But he just, that's enough. Anyway, I was negative. Honestly, I was, because if you even split over the weekend, you know, what do? You're 3.5 back at that point. Mm-hmm. You're about to face the Astros. I don't think anything would have become clear for you. And if, God forbid, you had seen another round of mediocre starts, and if Kikuchi or instead, you find a way to win the next 3 games in a row and set yourself up incredibly well now with the trade deadline approaching in just a couple of days, 4 days away. You know, it really was an incredible weekend. And as I think about this Mariners team, look, one of the best things about baseball is that it's a long season, right? Games in September don't mean the same as games in May. And I love that baseball games, you can kind of come in and out and you follow them and you're half-heartedly watching. And then in the ninth, kind of you lock back in for a few minutes. And that's the way you do it early in the year until it gets good. And then all of a sudden your team becomes a contender and you're glued. But right now we're in that intermediary zone where maybe you've already made plans. Like maybe your wife has said, hey, let's go see Shakespeare in the Park. And
I feel like this is maybe some personal plans.
I don't know. I'm just saying maybe your wife says, let's go see Shakespeare in the Park.
Got
and
it.
All of a sudden, you're at outdoors in 130 degree heat yesterday watching at Magnuson Park. Midsummer Night's Dream. So, you know, these things can happen on a Sunday when you would rather be watching the Mariners games. So what the Mariners have reached is peak staring at your phone inappropriately while you're out in public and not supposed to be looking at it.
How mad was Heather at Shakespeare in the Park? And how many times did she tell you, this is act 3, Mike, pay attention. This is when it gets good.
I don't think she liked it when I turned and whispered. I was like, they won. It was great. Bowers threw the guy out at third base and then they got him. And she's like, yeah, I don't care. We're watching. You're being rude to the actors.
Yeah. And you're like, but this is art. What the Mariners are doing
is art. I agreed to come. I didn't agree to pay rapt attention the entire time.
We all know what happens. The Shakespeare stories have been around forever.
So
right? The Mariners is still unfolding.
I've read this play. I don't know what's going to happen in the Mariners game. So to me, that's kind of where they are. And they've forced themselves into, you know, hopefully front of the brain thinking for all of us in terms of what they're doing every single day. And now for Jerry DePoto and his crew, what they're going to do in their big moment in the next 4 days before the deadline.
I love the explanation, though, because it's when we see it in our regular daily lives in different ways that we realize a team is actually contending. For instance, my roommate doesn't care about baseball at all. Literally, not only could she probably not tell you anything about it, she doesn't want to. She doesn't care. It's just not her thing. Loves football, doesn't really care for baseball. She has started for the first time, if I'm clearly working and finishing up a game, she'll go, did they win? For the first time, I've started getting questions about
good.
This. And we've been roommates or we've been friends for almost 10 years, right? this is, that's when you know, there's just, when you start seeing interest from people, I mean, you say you're checking your phone at events, risking being a little rude because you're interested. And I'm starting to get questions from friends that don't like sports or don't follow baseball saying, hey, so what are the Mariners doing? Are they still winning? Is that still happening? I mean, that's when it gets really exciting, too. Speaking of some of those moments, one of the most exciting players has been Mitch Haniger. Let's listen to this play of his second home run on Saturday.
Now the set by Bassett. And here comes the 2-2 on the way, swinging a drive again, deep center field. Laureano going back, looking up, goodbye baseball to the batter's eye, straightaway center. Mitch Haniger does it again. A long bomb into straightaway center field.
And if you thought that was the only highlight, you were wrong, because also on Saturday was the walk-off on a wild pitch.
And the pitch on the way to Haniger, way outside in the dirt, gets on by Garcia. Here comes Kelnick on the score, hands in the air, and the Mariners win it on a wild pitch, 5-4. A walk-off wild pitch, Kelnick scores, and the Mariners take game 3 of the 4-game series, another walk-off win. Holy smokes, what a finish here at T-Mobile Park.
Now, a wild pitch can't be a batter stat or whatever, but I'm going to go ahead and put that on Haniger. He'd managed to get 2 home runs. Pitcher's clearly trying to avoid him. And instead, it becomes a wild pitch, and they get the win. And the conversation about Haniger brings me, Mike, to conversations about the trade deadline. Haniger, Kendall Graveman, two names being thrown
around.
Before
you get there, I want to come back to Haniger. Let me just, those wild pitches, they won 2 nights in a row on wild pitches. Obviously, that is not the norm in baseball to win a couple of nights in a row due to wild pitches late in games, one in the 8th and one in the 9th. When Scott Servais first arrived here, I mean, years ago now, when he and Jerry first arrived in Seattle, and then even more so as they went through this trade deadline, what did they say they wanted? They wanted a team that was going to be hard to play against. That was their words. They used it over and over again. Just ask Brock. He never shuts up about it. They wanted to be hard to play against. Isn't that exactly what we saw this weekend? A team that was legitimately hard to play against. Yeah, the A's screwed up. The A's absolutely gave them games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday, you get 2 wild pitches from Diekman. By the way, kudos to Blowers for calling the second one. He was right on it. Saturday, you get the wild pitch to Haniger for the walk-off, and then somehow Jared Kelnick ended up looking like Tony Montana. Like, what was going on with his nose? Like, I don't
know. I tried to track it. I think it was Ty France that originally brought out the baby powder. And
it's a tough look.
Tough stuff.
We call that antiquing.
They look like Daryl Strawberry in the 86 Mets, man. Anyway, why does that happen? Because they're hard to play against, right? Why do you get yesterday an over-aggressive Matt Chapman trying to take third base on a single to left center, not right center, but left center, and getting thrown out at third by Jake Bowers? Because the Mariners are putting pressure on the other team to go beyond the norm. And once you've put that pressure on them, the other team may not respond well. They have been hard to play against. We saw it against Toronto. We saw it against the White Sox. We saw it against Tampa. We saw it in the way they battled back against the Yankees, even after getting destroyed in the first 2 games. I think they deserve a tremendous amount of credit for finding these ways to be gritty and to pull these games out, because they're so hard to play against.
They deserve a tremendous amount of credit. Do they also deserve a chance to make a run at a wild card spot? I mean, if you're Curtis, and we've talked about this before, why won't you do it? You don't get it. I love the way he said this. You don't get to pick and choose how you get to the postseason when you've been waiting 20 years. Just get there, as long as you don't have to give up anything significant. And you're looking a little, I don't know.
Well, give me your answer first. What do you think? Do they deserve it?
Do they deserve to get to the postseason?
Do they deserve more resources on this team to go after whatever comes next?
I think that there is nothing. I don't think they should give up any of their top prospects to try to make any kind of run at what would be a deep playoff push this year. I don't think they're good enough. It is a fun team to watch. I can't overlook not just the run differential, but I think that this is going to be a very stark dose of reality going against the best offense in MLB.
Yeah, I mean, the Astros are good, and you're going to see it here. And if, God forbid, you get swept, which we've seen happen before, right, as this team gets themselves to the brink of contention, they get swept by the Astros. We've seen it a few times. I think we saw it 2 or 3 times in 2017 alone. So you got to go in with eyes wide open. I guess I would say this. I don't think anybody deserves to make the playoffs. I don't think that making the playoffs is the goal. I know it feels like the goal because that's what gets pointed to. The Mariners haven't made the playoffs in 20 years. Okay, yeah, I've heard. But is that really your goal? The goal's not to make the playoffs. The goal is to win the World Series.
Well, if that's you're someone that's goal. A long time, you could say like, oh, well, if you punch your ticket, you've got a shot.
You do. But what's your goal? Your goal is to win the World Series. That's right. What you were setting out to accomplish. That's why you tore this whole thing down in 2017. Could that team the next year have made the playoffs? Maybe. If you had kept Seager and Cano and Cruz and Felix, the rest of that group, and added another piece or two around them, could they have broken this playoff drought? Yeah, maybe. But the goal wasn't to just break the playoff drought. The goal is to win a World Series. Mm-hmm. So you got to think really hard about what the best way is to achieve your ultimate goal. Not to sneak into the playoffs, which has value, but how do you reach the World Series? And then it gets more complicated. Because if you don't show the belief in this young nucleus, if you don't show them that you have their back, do they quit on you? Do they say, all right, this team's not serious, this front office doesn't really want to win? Does Kyle Seager poison the well? I believe he could do that. If you don't, I mean, you heard his comments, I know I'm sure you're going to play him. Mm-hmm. Kyle Seager sure sounds like he's ready for them to add some resources to go make a run. If you don't give him those resources, does he spoil everything for the young guys and say, see, look at these jokers in the front office. Look at these jokers in management. They don't care about winning. Okay, Scott maybe has you snowed with some great meetings and stuff like that. But if the front office isn't going to add when you're a game and a half out, how serious should you take what it means to be a Mariner? So while they can't, you're right, give up their top prospects because their real window starts next year, you can't also do nothing because I think you run a very serious risk inside the clubhouse.
I think they can still do something. I think both of us agree that there is a quality veteran second baseman that you can get, whether it's Scope, whether it's Merrifield, that won't cost you an arm and a leg in terms of prospects. And if you want to contend and if you want to keep Haniger and Graveman, you're going to have to give up prospects, right? You're going to have to make sacrifices elsewhere. So, again, I think that it would cost them a lot of their future if they wanted to be a World Series team this year. So, I was going to say, I mean, it's if you want to make a run at a World Series this year, you need so many pieces. And that's when you're giving up pieces you can't afford to lose in the future. So I understand that there's limited resources they can actually get in this trade period.
Are you willing to consider giving up more of your higher rated prospects if it means you're getting guys who are going to help you for the next 2 to 3 years?
Yes.
So I mean,
as long as it's not Kelnick, Rodriguez, I would be willing to part with one of the two remaining right-handers.
Okay.
Either Kirby or Hancock. Or Kirby.
Okay. So you're willing to part with either Hancock or Kirby. Are you willing to part with either Cal Raleigh or Luis Torrens?
Yes.
Okay. Are you willing to part with Trammell?
Yes.
Okay. So you're starting to build a list of people, right, that you're willing to give up. You just drafted the kid Ford. Are you willing to part with him? You haven't even seen him yet. Are you willing to part with him in the right deal?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let me continue. Like, you can kind of keep. Are you willing to think about Kelnick if the right guy for
no.
a long enough term was available?
No, but it's because of what it would tell me. As you know, I read into a lot of things, and it's if this organization were to part with Julio or Kelnick, I think it would indicate to me they're a little more directionless than I thought because that was the plan. That's what you're building on. That's what you're promising people as part of your core.
Okay.
If you're trading either of those two, I'm wondering if you don't believe in your plan anymore. And that's a stupid way to read into it, but it's hard for me not to do that when those are the two names we've been pitched for years
right.
now.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of validity to that. I can't imagine them giving up their top handful of prospects, but this isn't a world in which you can give up nothing and get something great back. That world doesn't exist, right? Brock and I used to always joke about the people, trade for Barry Bonds, you can give up Kenji Jojima and bring back Bonds. Like, yeah, the world doesn't work that way. You've got to give up something if you want to get something. The nice thing in baseball now is that guys like Jonathan Scope, who's in Detroit, mm-hmm. his deal expires at the end of the year. You don't have to give up anything to get him. Thankfully, like the game has changed a little bit where guys who have no control after this year, you can get him for somebody that you've probably never heard of.
So why wouldn't they ever make that?
I would like to see them do that. I mean, I think that's a possibility, but I think what we're seeing is they're working down their list. It started yesterday with Frazier, who's what's Frazier's first name? It's not Todd.
Adam. They had both actually.
I know this year. I know that, but I was confusing the two of them. Adam Frazier, really good second baseman, right? And the Mariners go after him. They ended up losing the bidding war to San Diego. But I think what we saw there was incredibly important. They were willing to spend money. And we'll talk more about that later in the show. But you start there. Then you try Merrifield. If it doesn't work with Merrifield and you hang on to your guns and don't give up the guys, Stacey, that you don't want to give up, well, then maybe you settle on Scove when it's all said and done. But if your goal is to win next year and in 23 while still giving yourself a shot this year, yeah, I think they're playing that handbook very well.
All right, we'll get back to this conversation, and it's one that'll follow us all throughout this Astros series as well. Right now, it is time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Less than a week to go before the trade deadline, and Mark Feinson of MLB.com reported yesterday the Mariners have interest in Royals all-star utility man Whit Merrifield. What is the real headline?
The Mariners are not a playoff team unless they add to this roster. That's how you should be reading any trade proposals you see, any trade reports you see. It's if they do not add, they are not getting to the playoffs. They need help, whether it's to the starting rotation, whether it's adding a bat to your lineup, whatever it is, preferably a second baseman, you need a right-handed hitter in there. They need help. And if they want to get to a wild card spot this year, and I probably think that's the best they can do, and some people think that would be worth it, you need to make a trade.
How do you feel about second base help versus starting pitching help?
I'm feeling more confident than probably you are about Dunn. I think the return of Dunn, I'm feeling like, oh, maybe that'll be just enough. Your bullpen's been great. If you hang on to Graveman, if you hang on to some of your relievers, maybe it's enough.
Mm. I get what you're saying. Yes, you are more bullish on Dunn than I am. You're more bullish on Kikuchi probably than I am as well. Even if you had all five of your guys right now, I still would say you need to go out and get a starter. It takes six. Guys break down, especially coming off the short season last year. Logan Gilbert's never gone this deep into a season as well. I mean, to me, you need starting pitching help. Yes, I get excited about second base, and I understand the argument that if you do make the postseason, the end of your rotation kind of falls away.
Mm-hmm.
You can never have enough pitching. Never, ever, ever, ever. And as much as I like Merrifield, and I think it'd be a good deal, I think starting pitching is just much more important for this club.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number two, Cardinals defensive end Chandler Jones reportedly requested a trade out of Arizona this past offseason. What is the real headline?
We didn't see this one coming, says Cardinals source, following the departure of Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, and Calais Campbell.
Who could have seen this coming?
Steve Keim not having a great go of it with Arizona of late. And not to mention, we had Josh Weinfuss of ESPN on with us. He said that this is a make or break year for both Cliff and the GM, Steve Keim, because you think of the moves that they've made. You made the trade for Hopkins. What if he's unhappy? What if the deal that you gave him made Chandler Jones unhappy, which is kind of the implication from that report.
Is he going to retire, by the way?
Chandler Jones?
No, DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, because of the vaccine stuff?
I thought
no,
he was going to retire.
Oh,
he did?
Yeah.
So he's not going to retire.
I don't know. At least not for right now.
Dude, if you retire, you don't get the money. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I won't get retired.
Never mind then. Okay. Never mind.
Fair enough.
No, but it's interesting. I thought it was because you were obviously covering during the hire of Schneider,
mm-hmm.
and I had forgotten that Keim was part of that conversation or a big part of that conversation.
He was probably the biggest name that we talked about. I mean, as they were interviewing candidates to be their director of football operations or GM or whatever they were going to call it, he was the guy that was most often linked to Seattle, and my memory says that it came down to him or John Schneider.
Yeah, and look at the way the two franchises have moved. And obviously, there's more at stake there, right? Seattle found a franchise quarterback, and Arizona had one, but not consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where they fell apart. But you have a string of defensive stars that have now been very unhappy with ownership.
Yeah, the other difference is I think you have fantastic ownership here in Seattle, about as good as it can get anywhere mm-hmm. in sports, first with Paul Allen, and we've seen no indication that that has changed since his passing. The Bidwells have always been bad owners, and I know the younger was a Josh Bidwell is supposed to be better than his dad, but at the end of the day, that's a bad family ownership that has always cared more about income and less about the product on the field.
Headline Rewrites.
It's Ian Rapoport saying this, so take it with a grain of salt, but he says that Aaron Rodgers has indicated to people close to him that he intends to play for the Packers this season. What's the real headline?
Can you imagine rooting for a team where a quarterback starts drama and then you spend weeks following it and it ends up being nothing? Gotta feel for the Packers.
All right. kids.
It's really tough. I can't imagine what that would be like, and it's really a bummer for them. I mean, all of this drama for nothing, getting worked up, getting their heart going. That can't be healthy.
It was
for
all
you.
For nothing?
It was all for nothing.
Can you imagine? What would that be like?
I truly can't put myself in their shoes.
Well, thankfully, here in Seattle, Russell Wilson never actually requested a trade. He just hypothesized on which teams he might be interested in going to if,
yeah.
in some alternate version of the world, he did request a trade.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Aaron Rodgers, what a wuss, man. You're going to back down like this after all that? You're going to back. I can't stand Aaron Rodgers, man.
He's easy to hate.
He is. And he quit on his team, which led to this entire thing. To me, he started this. He's the one who quit on his team in the NFC Championship game, causing them to draft Jordan Love, causing him to get more upset. He was the one who started this whole thing. And now, after unleashing this bombshell on draft day of all times, now he's just going to go back and play for his team? That's weak, man.
I do think the assumption is, though, that this is the final year. This is the final shot. Curtis, you were looking at an Instagram post that he had saying, I think this is the last dance.
Not just him, but also Davante Adams.
Right.
They posted the same picture of Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, which I believe was used on the cover of the Last Dance series, whatever. Yeah. So I think they both kind of are gearing up for their last ride here.
Well, we'll see how far they get. Got to be frustrating to get all the way to the NFC Championship and not continue to go forward. I will say, for Aaron Rodgers, it wasn't Aaron Rodgers' fault this year.
This year.
Important to clarify.
This year.
All right. Gras has been the conductor of the Dare to Dream Express. When it comes to the Mariners, we'll find out how he's feeling after this series next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us now is the Graz, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Graz, conductor of the Dare to Dream Express. That's obviously how I teased to your segment heading into it. It's, I guess, the official title that we're giving you now. I mean, are you taking new people aboard? How's the Dare to Dream Express going?
Oh, it's packed. We got people. It's like a subway train. People hanging it by straps on top. Everyone wants on board, and why not after this weekend?
I imagine it like Snowpiercer. Like people just desperate.
It's dark.
They have to stay on.
All of a sudden, there's like a class structure. Yes. The Dare to Dream Express actually has some big class issues.
Right. Yeah.
It hasn't gotten there yet. Good. But that's definitely something that's looming in the distance.
Yeah.
How are you, Graz?
I'm good, Michael.
This was a heck of a weekend, man, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was, and it's you know, I think everyone realizes that the way the team is winning is what's making it, you know, half the fun. It's, you know, it's one thing to just win; it's another thing to win so inexplicably sometimes, and to win so many one run games, and to win, you know, so many extra inning games. It's somewhat illogical, but that's kind of what baseball can be sometimes, somewhat illogical. So it's a lot more fun than the alternative, and I just. With Houston coming in, this is the biggest series it feels like we've had in a long time.
So how do you view those kind of inexplicable wins? Are they indicative of a team that is playing over its head and will eventually regress back to where they should be? Or are they indicative of a team that is capable of doing things beyond stats and something worth banking on moving forward?
I think the latter is always a possibility. I mean, it's always possibly true. I mean, we know what the numbers tell you, and most of the time, you know, you play back down to them, but not all of the time, not always. So, you know, this is a team you're looking around for X factors and things like that, and they seem to have some of them. You know, they've got a large group of them came up together, which is a strong thing. You've got a degree of unselfishness. I thought what really a thing that stood out, and I'm not sure who made it a point of mentioning it. It might have been Brett Stecker that. You know, when they had the walk-off or the wild pitch walk-off, you know, they kind of celebrated, let Kelnick celebrate like he'd made the play. That was a little subtle thing that I think, you know, for a guy who's struggling, you know, probably really, really appreciated. So, you know, you seem to have got the veterans in the right place and playing well. You've got youngsters all over the place who are excited and are playing together. And when that happens, you know, the X factors can kick your way in baseball. So I think, look, I am a big, big proponent of adding something here at the deadline, no matter how little. I think you add something. I'll never forget in '95, my buddy Jay Buhner making the point, and it was, you know, Andy Bennis. It was kind of a big name at the time, but it was really the first time that management had added something at the trade deadline. And that was something that that reverberated through the clubhouse. And I think, you know, looking at Kyle Seager's comments, you'd have the exact same circumstance here. So what I am hopeful more than anything is unless, you know, it's an ugly sweep coming up, is seeing them add something by the trade deadline.
Would you trade Mitch Haniger or extend Mitch Haniger?
Oh, my Lord, I would not trade Mitch Haniger. Unless you want to cut the guts out of this team right now, I'm not trading him. I think that he's still valuable to you right now. I don't know that that you extend him immediately. I don't know that that's the decision you have to make, but I am not letting him go at this point with this team.
You know, Seattle has a way of connecting with its teams that is unique, right? We certainly saw it with the Legion of Boom, a team that seemed to almost act the way Seattleites wanted to, but were sort of afraid to act, right?
Wow.
As brash as they were and as loud as they were. They were very un-Seattle-y, and yet Seattleites just completely took to them. What do you see as the potential relationship between this core nucleus with the Mariners and the Seattle Mariner fans?
You know, I think it's for every longtime Seattle Mariner fan in your muscle memory, is the start of this decade, is the 90s and the early 2000s when baseball was king. I mean, when Safeco, it was Safeco Field at the time, was selling out every single game. You know, you've got that in your past here. And, you know, it's funny, we used to talk about for a while the Seahawks having that with their fan base when they went through their rough stretch. But, you know, you have that with this fan base, you know, that they remember what it's like to be in a pennant race. I mean, you go back on YouTube and look at some of the videos of those years and how loud the crowd is and how into it they are. And, you know, you need a good story, and you have one here. You know, it's as much as we're talking about it here, let's keep in mind that there's plenty of time for a lot more people to get excited about it. You know, this was a big week, you know, with the Kraken, you know, coming in and creating a lot of buzz as well. You know, the sports was kind of raised to a higher level, and here's this young Mariner team, you know, going up there with them and really putting on this great show. So I think this team has got the opportunity to really connect, and I think you're going to see it in particular in attendance, and you're going to see it pretty soon in attendance, because I think a lot of people were watching this weekend, and a lot of people I know liked what they saw.
When it comes to Mariners teams that felt like they could be a playoff team and didn't end up being one, we have about 20 to choose from. Where does this team rank in terms of the best version of that, or the closest you felt to them being legit?
It's still hard to say, Stacey, because you know, this team is so young. This team is, and the way they're set up, they've never been in a race before. So, you know, it's hard to make that judgment here on July the 26th when nothing has quite happened yet. I mean, we'll see what happens over. Obviously, you know, over the next 6 weeks is going to determine where they're at. And look, we really hyped up these two series because they were right before the trade deadline. But you look at that series that they've got after the trade deadline, going to Tampa, going to New York. So, you know, it's going to be a rough stretch there. It's too early to say with this team where they fit, but. But right now, it's a great ride to be on, and it's a lot of fun to watch. And look, I just, you know, that they've kind of shown that they're fairly fearless. We've used phrases in this town before, like refuse to lose, and this team seems to have that element to them. And winning those close games, I do believe without question, winning breeds winning. I think it makes you confident that you're never out of it. And this team has got every reason to feel that way. The way they played this year, that's a tremendous thing for a team to have, a sense that, you know, no matter what, we're going to win. And then to be such a young team and be so good in one-run games, you know, so far this year is another really important thing to have. The expectation of winning means a lot in a lot of sports, and especially baseball.
You know, Graz, you mentioned what a big week it was, and the dust is now sort of settled on what the Kraken did on Wednesday with their expansion draft, waiting now for the next phase of that free agency to open up. As you sort of look back on it now, how are you feeling a little bit removed from the draft about what they did?
You know, I think, Michael, I'm feeling a lot better, and I wasn't feeling bad, but I'm feeling a lot better about how they went about their business with that expansion draft, and I'm getting to this point. You know, they're looking at another flat cap in hockey, which is really rough for a lot of teams. You know, obviously the Kraken is just popping in, so we haven't been following it that closely. But this has been a big story in the offseason, is another flat cap year, and teams, you know, come October the 12th, the week before the season opens, are going to have to be making moves to adjust that. And the Kraken are uniquely positioned, of course, to be in a position where they can really make some significant moves late. So while I expect them to be active in free agency, I think you're looking at a period of time, the first week or two of October, where they're going to be able to swoop in and make some very, very good, you would think, some very, very good deals, because they'll be one of the few teams with any cap space before the season starts. So I think the general idea, getting a young team, getting a scrappy team, and leaving yourself a lot of cap room is one that makes particular sense this year. So I feel pretty good about it.
He is the Graz. Great stuff today. And I'm just assuming there's absolutely nothing that would take the Dare to Dream Express off the rails, right?
Not in the immediate future, no.
I
all
love
aboard.
It. I
all
love
aboard.
It. All right, thanks, Graz.
Okay, Stace.
Bye, Graz.
We've been talking about whether or not the Mariners should extend Jerry DePoto, but there's someone who's just as important to their success, and his future is also in limbo. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners take on the Astros tonight in the opener of a three-game series. Darren McCacken will be making his first MLB start. Pre-game starts at 6 p.m., first pitch at 7:10 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. This hour of Jake and Stacey, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. No Jake today. He's out on paternity leave. In his place, Mike Salk. Hello, Mike.
You know what's great about Darren McCacken?
What?
He's not Robert Duggar. I mean, like,
your
there's a lot.
Your hate of Robert Duggar feels so unfounded. What did Robert do?
He was a bad pitcher.
Well.
Consistently went out and did not give his team a chance to win.
Okay,
it's sort
I
of
raise
like,
you.
It's sort of like Curtis's hate of Rafael Montero.
Consistently Rafael Montero went out was so much worse took, than Robert Duggar.
No, not really. He just was used in bigger leverage situations.
I guess I have no memory of
which
what
made
Robert
the
Duggar
pain
did or didn't do.
Even all the worse.
Yeah. Well, it was always bad. It was always bad. You knew there'd be a run or two given up when he came in. Where is Robert Duggar?
I don't know. Who cares?
Last I saw, I think he was in Tacoma.
Okay. That
seems like an appropriate place for him.
Well, I don't want to talk about...
Maybe he's in University Place with Jake.
I don't want to talk about Robert Duggar right now.
River.
In fact, I don't want to talk about a Mariners player per se. I want to talk about Scott Service. Mm. We've been talking about Jerry DePoto, whether or not they should extend him. And I think you could argue Scott Service has been a central figure to their surprising success this year as a team, especially when you consider how impactful he can be in close games, in extras, in all those moments where there are important decisions to be made, and he's consistently been making the right ones. And you pointed specifically, Mike, to some decisions about the bullpen this past
weekend.
Well,
yeah, I mean, my extend Scott Service case has started a while ago, and it's mostly based on the culture that he's built here.
Way to claim that you've been on top of it. Like,
well,
but you're just now getting on the Scott Service.
No, not at all.
Name just, three albums.
What are we doing here? Like, the guy has done such a good job with an impossible situation. Hey, man, your job is to build a good winning culture without winning.
Okay.
Well, he did that. He managed to find a way to build a pretty darn good culture here despite really tearing it down over the last couple of seasons. And, oh, by the way, took the Kevin Mather stuff in stride and didn't let it affect the play on the field at all. If anything, turned it into a bonding moment between him and his team. I think the world of what Scott has done in terms of the culture. Number two, development. Well, the young guys have developed under his watch. That was his strength coming into this job, and I would argue he's done it as well as anybody. He's gotten the most out of the least, I think, so far with this team, especially once you factor in all of the injuries. But generally, managers are judged based on how they handle the bullpen. And I thought what he did this weekend was a masterclass in bullpen management. Yes, his bullpen gave up two earned runs in those three games. One of them, by the way, was the cheapest little dinky home run that barely hit the right field pole and ended up tying the game the other night. That was about as lousy a home run as you're going to see on Saturday. So that was one of the only two runs his team gave up. What I loved, and I don't know whether I go too deep for people, but if you were watching all of the games Friday, he brought Sewald in to get out of the seventh, which he did, and then brought him back out for the eighth. Raise your hand if you were like me saying, oh, no, terrible idea. don't bring this guy back out. As good as he's been, he got out of the inning.
Right.
Rest him. You're going to need him later in the series. Get him out of there. Bring in Steckenrider. And instead, Sewald went 1-2-3, no problem. Got him right through the eighth inning. They didn't have to use Steckenrider that night. They used both of them on Saturday. And as I'm watching the game on Sunday, going, all right, they've used Graveman twice in a row, which they don't even like to do. There's no way he's available tonight. Sewald had been used, I think, twice in a row and 3 out of 4. He was probably not going to be available. And guess what? You didn't run out of pitchers in the ninth, and you had another guy available who you trust in Steckenrider because you didn't use him on Friday. These things have a way of paying dividends down the line, because baseball's not just played in individual game units. What happens on Friday affects Saturday and Sunday and Monday. And when Logan Gilbert only goes 2+, and you're forced to dig into your bullpen the way they were to still have enough pitchers available of quality to win the game on Sunday, I thought was remarkable bullpen management by Scott Service.
Well, in doing this, when you have basically an empty spot in the bullpen with the suspension of Hector Santiago and you can't replace him.
Great point, right? So you put all of those things together and add in the short start and add in the fact that Kikuchi really wasn't great. Marco didn't go deep. I mean, like, you kind of put those things together, and like, I thought he did a ridiculously good job this weekend, and it's been indicative of what we've seen this year. Let me just add one other point to that. While you and I will look at some of those things and sort of say, all right, they did this, they did that, what I always think is interesting is how differently they see the game from us. Scott's great at viewing a couple games down the road. But I think the other thing is, why did we see Sewald in the eighth of both of those two games? Because they wanted him for their best hitter, and that was Matt Olson. They had very clearly identified Matt Olson as the guy in this lineup you don't want to let beat you.
Makes
so
sense.
Who is the good matchup against Olson? Well, guess what? He's 0-6 against Sewald. So 0-6 with a walk, if I'm not mistaken.
Which is impressive for, what, 26 home runs from Olson this year?
Yeah, he's been ridiculous. And Sewald is a righty facing a lefty. So you put all of it together, and it may not make the most sense in your mind. But if their idea is, nope, we want Sewald against this guy, and guess what? He faced him twice, both times in the eighth, got him both times, and the Mariners end up winning both games by a run. That stuff matters over time. They used Misevich to get him in the eighth or the seventh or eighth on Sunday. So they clearly had a plan for how they wanted to go after the A's best player, and it worked. That is good management. That is why you extend a guy like Scott Service.
What kind of manager manages a World Series team? Like, can Scott be that person?
I don't see any reason he can't. Now, obviously, he's never done it, right? I mean,
what are there specific things a manager might need when you're managing a World Series team?
Well, I think finding ways to deal with pressure, right? I mean, finding ways to let guys be themselves in the biggest moments and not letting those moments get too big for them. You can't make gigantic mistakes, right? You can't do something that inhibits your team's chance to win. But how often can you put your players in the best position for them to do their thing? Isn't that exactly what Scott's been doing here for a while? I don't know. I just don't see any reason not to extend him. And the fact that they haven't just continues to frustrate me. I think with both DePoto and Service, they are deserving of the extension. What Jerry's done, I mean, what was the news today? 4 guys in the top 15, according to Baseball America. That's entirely what Jerry DePoto was asked to do in the last few years. He's done it. He's done what you asked him to do. Scott Service has developed a winning culture on a team that wasn't necessarily winning. That's exactly what you asked him to do. You have to reward people who do the jobs you ask of them with new contracts.
Now, we're all assuming that DePoto getting that extension means Service will be extended. So are we just waiting for DePoto?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe there's a trickle-down effect. But why do you have to wait? First of all, I don't understand why they're waiting with either of them.
Right.
But why do you have to wait?
I mean, I don't get why they're waiting for either. And it does make me a little bit nervous, because by waiting for DePoto, either it tells me DePoto wants to be manager or wants something for way longer than they're willing to commit to him. Or it tells me that ownership isn't completely sold on the prospects yet. They aren't completely sold that Jerry's picks, while a lot of them are top 15 prospects, are going to pay off.
Well, that's fair. But I don't know what you would see to make you sold. Like, I mean, none of them are old enough yet and experienced enough yet.
Do you think if Kelnick came up and was blowing the doors off this game, they'd be sold?
I think that's possible, but I also think they brought him up too early. So, I'm not looking at this and saying it's indicative of what Jerry DePoto does as a developer of talent. I do think they brought him up a little early. I don't think it's going to hurt his development, but the idea of looking at him now and expecting the finished product, if that's what you're waiting to judge Jerry DePoto on, I think you're going to be really unhappy that you don't have enough data to go on.
Yeah. I mean, I've always assumed it's just been something where you want the rebuild to work and you want to make sure he can follow through with his end of the bargain, and they maybe don't feel like he's quite done that yet, which makes sense because his his extension that he's currently on is expiring in the midst of a rebuild. There's no way it was going to end, so you just got to decide for that. I could talk about this forever. I digress. Are the Mariners a legitimate playoff team? Let's talk about the team. It's a simple question, but an important one if they're going to be buyers at the deadline. So what are you willing to give up? Who's off limits? We're going to talk about that with Gary Hill of the Mariners Radio Network next.